Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to FetLife Station Internet Radio. You're listening to the show Life Without Parole, LWAP Radio. My name is Stacey Mandel. I'm in Philadelphia, where it's definitely still a Philly thing. And I co-host the show with Robert Groves, aka Reentry Rob. Rob is about 27 years down on a life without parole sentence at SCI Phoenix. And he's going to be calling in today at about 9:15, 9:16. But at the moment, I have on the line someone who's also serving a life without parole sentence at SCI Phoenix with Rob, and his name is Felix or Freddie Rodriguez. So I'd like to introduce him, calling in behind the walls here.
Good morning, Mr. Rodriguez. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning. Good morning. We're going to just get right into it for time's sake. I'm hoping that you can please let the LWAP listeners know how old you are, how long you've been incarcerated, and even maybe what you were sentenced to.
Okay. I fell when I was 26 years old, and right now I'm 53 years old. I've been incarcerated for 27 years, and I was sentenced to 5,200 years.
How many years?
5,200 years.
Yeah. So with such, yeah, that's all I can say. With such an extreme sentence, and at what age were you again?
I was 26 years old.
26.
Yeah.
How, what was that like? How difficult was it?
It was scary because, you know, when I got arrested for drugs only, and I took the responsibility, you know. That was part of the game. But then later on, when I was in charge for homicide, scared the crap out of me. I believe in the justice system. So I thought I was going to be exonerated from it, whatever. But when they came back with that time, my heart just dropped. Like, my life is over. You know, any connection I had in the, outside of the free world, I let go. I let go of my ex-wife at the time. And I had it said that I wasn't going to be in my children's life no more. It was just... I can't even begin to really explain when somebody tells you you're doing 5,200 years and you're only 26 years old.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing.
My brain can't fathom it. No one's brain can fathom that, even when it's happening. So what are some of your accomplishments, some of your proudest accomplishments in life? Sorry, go ahead.
And, you know, there's so many, but I think, like, one that's really standing in my mind real quick, and the first one is just being a father. You know, when you're young, everybody, what you want to be when you're young? Everybody, lawyer, doctor, fireman, whatever. But for me, I always wanted to be a father. I always had love for kids, you know? And I think that was my first greatest accomplishment I've ever done. And secondly was, able to keep a promise to my mom when I graduated high school.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
When I graduated high school, I was on my way to college, but my father got sick, so I decided to stay out and help my family, but I came here and I was able to keep my promise and graduated from Villanova. Mind you, it took me 16 and a half years, but I did it.
Wow. That is an outstanding accomplishment. Congrats.
And I think the third one, the one I'm more impressed at, and there's more of a collective group, was the organization I'm part of. We was able to create a scholarship that was done, funded, and raised by incarcerated men only. No outside help or nothing. And we started that back in like 2008, and now as of today, we're giving out over 150 scholarships. And our scholarship is called Educational Over Incarceration. And this was decided by a group of men who decided that they took so much and left so much destruction behind that they wanted to give back a little. And that was their way. And to this very day, we continue this process of 15 years or strong.
So, is this the LACEO organization?
Yeah.
Okay, can you dive a little?
It's an acronym for Latin American Culture Exchange Organization.
Can you dive a little deeper into what you guys provide and what it wants to accomplish?
Well, when it originally started, it started back in 1968, and it was for, you know, the Spanish people that was coming in, a lot of them couldn't speak English or write English at all. Or they was lacking stuff, so it was just a thing just to help Latin community with us, since we were such a small group at the time. And as it grew, you know, each president kept evolving, and we became more educational. Teaching our Latin community, and then, you know, we opened the door for others, you know, and we have a collective group of men who's part of the organization, and they want to do something. They want not only get back to the community, but also help the Latin community rise up and navigate in here.
This call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
You know, one of the dilemmas that Latin people deal with in here is because their main language is Spanish, and a lot of them can't read or write English, but you have to meet certain criteria to meet parole. You know, so, you know, one of the things we're trying to do is to help as many as we can to read and write English so they'd be able to do the program that's required so they get be eligible for parole. So that's our concession. But our main thing is just to educate in any way we can in here and out there.
Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
What are some of the myths, the lifer myths, that you know of that you might want to dispel in reference to yourself, even?
Right. That's such a funny thing because, like, I work for, like, Mural Arts, right? There's a Mural Arts.
I know them, yeah.
So they always bring people in to meet us, and it's always funny to see or hear the perception of us, right? And so one of the questions we always ask them, what did you think coming in? He's like, man, I don't know. I've watched all these prison movies, and I feel this is going to be like this and be like that. And one of the main references they always go to is The Wire. I don't know why, but they always go to that show, The Wire. But what is funny is that when they leave with a whole different perspective about us. They see that many of us is well-educated, well-spoken, well-mannered, you know, and, you know, it's nothing what they anticipated, and they just leave with a whole different perception about us, which is great because, you know, we get these second, third-hand story of who we are, what we are, and what we like, that they, you know, they got this fear of us. And then when they meet us, it's just, we get a chance to change their mind and look at it completely different, and they go out there with first-hand story directly from us and change people, the perception they have about us.
Mm. So if there was someone who is listening and has never met you, how would you describe the man you are today?
You always think about what you're going to say. It's not easy what you say in here, but it's different what you're going to say to the ones out there. And I think the first thing I want people to know that I'm more than just that terrible moment that caused me to come to prison. You know, this is my first time of being locked up, so that's to show you. And secondly, that in spite of the 27 years I've been incarcerated, that my core always has been the same. You know, I believe in people. I always believe that right is right, wrong is wrong, and do right by others. And I believe in putting people above things and material, you know, especially in the world now that is so materialistic, you know. And I always say, family and friend is my greatest treasure. Mm. And, you know, that in spite of my predicament, in spite of where I'm at, that with limited resources, I was able to accomplish more things that I ever thought impossible, you know. And I let people know, can you imagine if I had unlimited resources? or have someone believe in me or give me the benefit of the doubt and give me a chance, what can I truly accomplish? So, you know, there's more to it than what you see. You know, so
yeah.
Be willing to give us the benefit of the doubt. Let us prove ourselves to you. You ain't got to trust me right away, but we are more than willing to prove ourselves to you if given the opportunity.
I hear you. If you could go back and talk to yourself prior to prison, what would that conversation be like?
You know, I always thought about that. You know, you watch these TV with these time machines like that, because I haven't had the opportunity to go back and tell my younger self. Give me a couple of things. One is, you know, I grew up in the street. I'm not, I had great loving parents and everything, but the street caught me. And that's the thing, that we believe in the street code, that we don't tell, no snitching, none of that. If you choose to be in the game, you know, take responsibility. And I believe that wholeheartedly, at the time at least. But what I realized is nobody was honoring the code. You know, you don't want honoring and everybody's coming around and doing whatever they need to do to be set free. And what I realized was I was a fool behind that. You know, the one I should have honored and been loyal to was my family and my true friends who wished nothing but the best for me. And I failed in that point. And I found myself constantly apologizing for that at times, you know, because, you know, I missed out 27 years of my children's life. I lost so many people I'm never going to see or say goodbye to. You know, I missed special moments of people who mattered to me in their lives, and I'll never get there, and I'll never be a part of that. And I still don't know if I will be a part of that, but I'm hopeful, you know?
Yeah.
To never let nobody, I grew up in an area where people were always doubtful, always telling you can't do this, you can't do that because of our circumstances or where we grew up at.
Yeah.
And I learned that I'm not letting anyone dictate my journey or put limitations to what I could do. And if I could have told myself back then this and know what I know now, I could accomplish anything I wanted to.
How about more adults, more influences in your life back then who would have also told you that you're not limited that way?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I had a few people, but again, I was young. You know how we get, we young, we think we know everything. And it's funny because I resonate all those lessons that was given to me back then. I remember them now. And some of these lessons was over 30 years ago, maybe even longer. And I remember and I laugh. I'm like, this is what they were telling me. Only if I would have listened. So if I can say anything to anyone, especially the younger generation or anyone who had never been incarcerated, if somebody's giving you some advice, take heed. You ain't got to do it right away, but keep that in the back of the mind because anyone could get locked up.
Yeah.
All you have to do is make a mistake, be in the wrong place at the wrong time. This is not just for criminals. You know, we got people in here who's actually innocent or was in the wrong place at the wrong time, who made a mistake and caused somebody their death. You know, so prison's not just, just criminal, but the law is going to follow the law. The law is not to mercy or anything like that. They have a rule, they set by the rules, they follow the rules, and that's it. You know, mercy comes from all of y'all out there who's willing to give us a second chance or hear us out, like, on the radio and think about these moments and these stories that we tell y'all over and over again so that y'all can have a different perception about us or just to think about it. Just give us the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Well, the streets, the quote-unquote streets, that's an environment that is, you know, when you're young and you don't have anything countering that or you have, you know, just a couple people giving you some lessons here and there or some tips, it's really not fair to expect any young person who's, you know, like, you know,
you
I think you even
left.
Said, I think sucked up by it. It's really not fair to expect a kid on their own to be able to combat that without enough other fortification.
Let me share this part with you real quick, that even though we might have both parents, we have all the family in the world, the street was strong. The street corner is strong. So it don't sometimes matter if you have all the advantages or anything. When you're enticed as a young person and the very enticing gets you, it don't matter where you come from. You can be rich, poor, in a suburb, in the inner city. If it's going to get you, it's going to get you. And we're seeing that right now. There's evidence right now about that right now. So, you know, when the street wants you, it's going to get you. So don't be fooled about predicting that a circumstance don't matter.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that, for those words of wisdom, Mr. Rodriguez. Anything else before we get cut off?
Yeah. There's something else.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Take good care. And that was Mr. Felix Rodriguez from SCI Phoenix. Please don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home. Everything that I see, I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly.
Welcome back. This is Life Without Parole Radio. And we were just speaking with Felix Freddie Rodriguez. And I have up next here his long, dear time friend, Eddie, and I have reentry Rob from prison. And then just so you know, after we wrap up this interview, we also happen to have his sister, Julia, and we have his daughter, Nia. These are Felix's family members. So please stay tuned for the whole show. Hi, Rob.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good. Say hi to Eddie.
Okay. Mr. Perez, what's up, Ed? Can I call you Ed, bro?
Yes, you can. How you doing, man?
Oh, man. Good morning, man. I'm glad first of all, that, you know, you're on the show, but also that, you know, you're here speaking on the behalf of, you know, your longtime friend, Freddie, man. I appreciate that, man. How long you and Freddie been friends, sir?
Oh, we've been friends since, like, at least, I say, from 86, 87.
That's a long time. A long time. I met Fred over Greaterford in 209, and our time might not be as long as yours, but you know, the man that I've got to know, he's a good man, and I know there's a lot more that you know about, and I'm glad you're here, you know, so we can dive a little deeper into that. Can you describe, you know, your relationship with Freddie prior to him going to prison?
Oh, definitely. Like I said, Fred is from the neighborhood. He's well-known. He always has been. He's always had a nice, charismatic, you know, character. People gravitate to him. He's funny. He's joke. Always makes good jokes. He gives you good advice. Fred is a couple years older than me, so I always looked at him like maybe like a mentor, big brother type. He always schooled me on everything from the game, from the streets, to girls, to life, you know? So that's why I know. This really, you know, it bothers me that he's in there for that, because the Freddie I know doesn't get down like that, man. You know, he's a born hustler. Yeah, natural hustler he is, but with violence, that's not his M.O.
Right. It's crazy you say that, because he's, you know, that's who he is in here. He's still, you know, he's still for the men. Like, it ain't a day go by, no matter what you need.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
He's the type of dude to give you a shirt off his back, man, but you always catch him, like, when go down activities, you know. He'll be sitting there speaking to the young boys, man, speaking to whoever, you know. So it's crazy that you said that. But as human beings, man, you know, we display, like, different aspects of ourselves, you know, to accordingly who we're interacting with. And when I say that, I mean, like when I'm on the phone with my mother and my sister, like, I you know, like, that protection kicks in, like, you know, that loving, tender side. But it's like when we're around our homies, you know, another side comes. So it's like, can you speak to some of Mr. Rodriguez's core qualities, you know, like, only that you would know of, like, his character and stuff like that, bro?
Well, like I tell you, man, so many things that I could talk about, but I know definitely I've seen this man help a lot of people out that need it, you know, when it comes to, like, not only money-wise, people that needed this place to stay, because Freddie, the one thing about him, I always remember him having his own place at an early age, you know, so people always had problems, they didn't have a place to stay. It's never a time that it would be weird to see three or four guys laying up in his house, you know. Yeah, we'll open the door, sit on there, you need a place to stay tonight, stuff like that, you know. So Freddie helped out a lot of people, man, a lot of people in many ways.
Yeah, I'm going to segue into that. You know, it's crazy you said that because I kind of want to ask about support. You know, support comes in many forms, you know, whether it be, you know, mentally, you know, financially, you know, just to name a few. Is there something you would be willing to provide, you know, if Freddie was to go ahead and walk out here today? You know, will you be able to provide that support, you know, mentally, financially, or whatever that may be?
Most definitely. Like I told Freddie, man, I moved to PA now. I'm from originally from New York, like Freddie, but I live in PA now, and he's definitely welcome.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Like I was saying, mi casa is his casa, man. He's definitely could stay with me, and as far as employment, I believe I can get him a job where I work at in the hospital. So those two things I definitely got for him. Any other thing I can help him out to get back to this world, I'm there for him.
It's crazy that I'm even asking you that, right? You know, when it comes to far as like a support, you know, and stuff like that, because resource wise, this is exactly what him and, you know, the organization that he's a part of, he's president of Dino de la Sale. And you know, it's a Latin organization that, you know, not only helps his Latin community, but anybody in need within the prison and outside the prison. So it's crazy that I'm even asking you that. But it's like the support that we give here is like totally different on the outside. Like, we've been incarcerated for so long, like we think we have these ideas on how things are gonna go, and then when you get out there, you get hit with the real world. So a lot of times employment, yes, that's necessary. Housing, that's necessary. But it's like that mental support that we can only get from like our family and people such as yourself. You know what I mean? So it's great to hear that you got there for him.
No doubt, man.
If you were able to speak, you know, directly to those who hold your dearest friend's freedom in their hands, what would you tell them?
Like someone in Freddie's situation, man?
Yeah, like as far as, you know, the courts, if you had an opportunity, if he got back in the courts, or if he was in front of commutation, you know, like what would you say on his behalf, you know, to let them know, you know, that he is the man he is today? Like, what would you convey to them?
I would definitely like to let this courts know they got it wrong with this gentleman as far as, you know, the violent part, because this man definitely didn't commit this. I wasn't there. I wasn't witness around him around that time, but I know this man so much that I could bet my life on that. You know, the system is not perfect, and they need to like find out, man. It's a broken system, man. The rules and the regulations when it comes to convicting people is sometimes just the best lawyer can get you out of situations like this, man. But the true innocence of guilty or not being guilty, it doesn't really apply in the courtroom, man. And then with Freddie's case, definitely I could say they got it wrong, man. That man shouldn't be in there this long. He don't deserve to be in there. And then he have a lot of, you know, family and friends out here who love that man that will definitely go up there with me and will tell the judge or whoever needs to hear this. They need to let that man out and continue to live out the rest of his life, man, because he don't deserve this, man.
It's you know, that's powerful because that's what we try to convey with L Operator, with Life Without Parole Radio. These are the voices. These are the stories. You know, these are the things that we're trying to get out to the general public, because from behind bars, they have no idea of who we are, you know, how we've educated ourselves, how we've changed, how we go ahead and support the 95% of the men, you know, or prisoners that are about to go home. Like, they never see what we do behind bars, you know. And I think that when you have these conversations such as we're having right now, the listeners get to see another side, you know, another side to Freddie, not just a brief summary of his crime. You know what I mean? The list of charges, you know, something that happened 20 something years ago when a man was a child. And then to receive an excessive sentence, like 50 to 100 years, like the likelihood that he would even, you know, serve that sentence out is exactly what we define as death by incarceration, DDI. But listen, man, I enjoyed your time, man. You know, is there anything that that, you know, I didn't ask or you would like to add, you know, on the behalf of your friend Freddie?
Like I said, man, I'm learning a little bit about the program you guys are doing. I commend you for that, brother, you know, and I'm sorry for you being in there yourself during all this time. And any way I can help out in this cause, let me know, reach out to me, because I definitely know there's a lot of brothers in there who don't deserve this, you know.
I appreciate that, man, and I just might do that, you know what I'm saying? But I thank you for your time, man, and you know, and just keep spreading the word about Freddie, and you know, keep him in prayer, man, because things are going to change, because, you know, people like him, but it's such, you know, a guy like Freddie, you know, God is going to shine a light on him, you know what I mean, because he shines a light on all those he gets in touch. So I appreciate your time, man, and thanks for joining us on LWOP Radio, bro.
No doubt. Thank you, man.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Eddie. So, Rob, while we have you, it's like, just so you know, when I was on with Freddie, we got cut off because you only get 15 minutes from prison, right, to make this phone call. And it's like, again, it's, I don't have the words to explain what it's like to have a conversation, you know, with someone from the inside. And I'm asking these questions, these big questions, and I know he only has 15 minutes to explain all that he's feeling, all that this big important moment for him that he wouldn't have except for this particular radio show. And he only has 15 minutes, and what it's like for me on the other end. Anyway, not that this is about me, but I'm just sharing my two cents here.
And it's true. And this is what we go through. That's what many go through on the inside. And when I say that is, whether you're going through the courts and you're standing in front of this judge and you're trying to go ahead and convince them that you're this man or you're this woman, you know, that you weren't 20, 30, 40 years ago, and you get this brief moment to try to convince someone that this is who you are today, and it has to come so fast. It's the same thing with commutation and how they prepare to go ahead and tell the story of their lives after decades and decades in prison, whether it be on a sheet of paper or standing nervously in front of somebody that holds your fate in their hands. And that's why we have another avenue, Stace, you know, that's why we have the Groves Notebook. So if you heard Freddie's voice today, you would also be able to go on the Groves Notebook. He just submitted his profile. It will be up there in about a week or two, so I will definitely make sure that it's up there.
Yeah, and for just want to emphasize, this is a Facebook page to everyone.
Right. And you can go on, it's called the Groves Notebook. You go on to Facebook, and just like you heard that man's voice today, you can also see pictures of his family. You can also see everything he's accomplished as far as his, you know, degree of, you know, his bachelor's, his master's, you know, stuff like that. Whatever you accomplish, trade certification, you can go ahead and check out everything that Freddie has ever accomplished while he's been in prison. And he's a 1 or 2 page file also of who the man he is today, nothing about his past. So, you know, we try to give it to you from both sides. You not only get to hear the voice, you also get to go ahead and see it. So, yes, it is unfortunate.
Yeah. So, and another unfortunate thing you're not going to like is that I have to cut you off from prison. This is your show. But I want to make sure we have time for his sister, Julia, and for his daughter, Mia, because we started just a couple minutes late today. And I want to make sure
Let me end with this. Let me end with this, Stace. I want to take a moment to acknowledge a win for the life of the community. Brother McHale, his name is Mr. Michael White, was just released a few days ago after a long, hard-fought legal battle. He served 47 years of incarceration, and he is in his early 70s. But unfortunately, with joy, there's also pain. The Lifer community just suffered another loss. Mr. Floyd Wilson, better known as Chill, has passed on. He served over 48 years in prison, was incarcerated since he was 17 years old, and he died at the age of 65. I just want to send my sincere condolences to the Wilson family. I want to tell, you know, that his family, I want to tell Brother Chill, you know, I know he's, you know, he's listening right now, you know, rest in power, brother. And LWAP listeners, you know, same place, same time, same fight. Reentry Rob, you know, and I'm out. Stace, you know, thank you for your time. Hold this down.
Yeah.
You have 1 minute left.
You go ahead and get to that interview with Freddie's daughter. It's more important. And
yes.
Listeners, I'll see y'all here next week.
Bye, Rob.
All right.
Take care. And we will be right back with...
The caller has hung up.
Julia, who is Freddie's sister. So don't go anywhere.
We're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home. Oh, oh, oh. I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on.
We are back, Life Without Parole listeners. This is Stacey Mandel, and I have on the line with me a special guest. I have Freddie's sister, Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Stacey. How are you?
We are good over here. Thank you. Doing well. Thanks for taking your time to come on.
You're welcome.
I wanted to ask you some questions just to give us more of a picture of Freddie and also to give our listeners an understanding of what it's like for their loved ones when someone is sentenced to a life without parole sentence. So if you'd be willing, can you please describe a little of the early years, you know, when you were being raised in New York with your brother?
It was a struggle. It was a rough and also at the same time a happy time.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, and I guess, you know, because we had, you know, growing up with family, it just needed, I mean, when you compare to how things are today, you realize that those days were actually your happy time because you have family with you at all times.
So family, you guys were tight. What was the mood like in your house a lot? Like what were the goings ons?
Well, we grew up, you know, our house was always full with family and friends. We grew up with music, dancing. When I think back, I remember our house always, especially on the weekends, my mom always had, you know, house party gathering with family and friends.
Mm-hmm. And anybody in trouble with the law?
And what do you mean, anybody in trouble with the law?
I mean, did you have regular people hanging out at your house who were, you know, formerly incarcerated?
One of our uncles. We had an uncle that was, my mom didn't have us exposed to anyone that was dangerous. That I can recall.
Yes.
I grew up in a house where, you know, a lot of things was not exposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't exposed to a lot of things as much as my brother has been.
So did Freddie help you with that? I mean,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Freddie's always been my protector. He always took care of me. He always protected my brother. So it's Freddie and we have a middle brother, and he always took care of us. He always looked out for us and made sure that we were, you know, weren't exposed to whatever was going on in the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my mom would do that, keep certain things away from us.
So has your bond with your brother changed since those times, since he was incarcerated?
Yes. Yes, I believe he's gotten stronger and brought us closer than ever.
How's that?
Well, you know, when Freddie was home, he had, you know, he was the one that helped. He had a huge amount of responsibility as far as helping around the house and taking care of my brother and I, and helping even financially. He would help with my mom, you know, take care of some stuff. And when he got incarcerated, when he was arrested, that responsibility was pretty much passed on to me. You know, where I had to help with my, you know, take care of my mother and my grandmother, because, you know, we have our grandmother who had no living children to take care of her. So I had to, you know, take on that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And what about, like, your relationship with Freddie? He was your protector. How did that change, if at all?
Well, yeah, well, it did, because it's like, no, I didn't, you know, I lost it. I kind of lost them. It's like you're burying someone, but they're not actually dead. But, you know, I lost having that daily contact with him. Now our contact was being dictated when we can talk, when we can see each other. It was very devastating for me.
Yeah. So do you remember how old you were when he left for prison?
Yes, I was about 23 years old.
Do you remember anything about the day he was arrested?
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to visit him. The day he got arrested, I was supposed to go out there to visit him. I was actually in my senior year at Monroe College, and it was the week of my finals, and one of my finals got rescheduled. So I had to cancel my plan to go that day. And it happened to be the next day I received a call from him saying that he was, that he got arrested.
And what was that like to hear that?
honestly, I thought it was a joke. I thought he was kidding with me, you know. And it was just a tone in his voice that I knew that this, whatever happened, was serious. It was really serious. And of course, you know, a couple of days later, I went out there and soon to find out exactly how serious it was. Mm-hmm. So it was very devastating.
Mm-hmm. So I forget, even though I already interviewed your brother, he's served about how many years already?
I believe he's going on 28 years.
Okay, so
I think he's going on 28.
How have you been able to maintain a relationship with him, something that's healthy and loving, despite all these years and the walls and the gates that separate you?
Well, you know, I would have to say Fred has put most of the effort in, the majority of the effort in, as far as keeping in touch with the family, and whether it was by phone or by letters. And you know, he was so, even though he was away from us and he was behind bar, you know, he made it feel like he was still around, because he always made the call, the letter, about us, not about him. You know, he always wanted to know how we were doing. And when we were struggling, he would just be there giving advice and supporting us through our hard times. And, you know, you just think, you know, saying that, I'm just thinking, who knows what he was going through. But like always, my brother's not selfish. He's a very humble man, and he always put everybody before him. And it's because of him that he, every day, every year, for the years he's been there, he makes the effort to stay in touch with the family, down to the nieces, to the nephews, and even those, the ones that never met him, they have such a bond with him. You know, just just talking to him on the phone.
So you say that he doesn't, he's never made stuff about him. He wants to just be focused on you all. And you also said he was, he's humble, if I heard you correctly.
Yeah. Yes, he is. He's a very humble man.
Have you ever had the opportunity to have a heart-to-heart with him? Maybe a conversation about what happened, his prior choices, and how that those affected you?
Yes, we have. He never had to explain why. I knew why, because my brother was just trying to make a way for the rest of the family. And, you know, he had plans, you know, before all this happened. He was actually in the process of opening up a business. He wanted to open up a candy store, I believe, a laundromat. He had a lot of business plan, and unfortunately, you know, that just got trashed once he got, you know, when he got arrested. That ended once he got arrested.
What kind of student was he?
Honor. He was always on the honor roll. Fred received a scholarship to go away to college, and I forgot which university. It was a very well-known university, and he turned it down so he could be...
It's okay to take a moment.
I'm just...
Yeah, it's okay.
You just hit me now that how much he has given up.
Yeah.
Look where he's at.
Yeah. Taking a moment and just, you know, maybe inhaling a little bit through the nose and exhaling as you wish. This is a very, there's no greater love, right? There's a sibling love is, I have a sibling too, and it's a very, I'm crying too. It's a very unique bond.
it's a very
unique bond. And,
it is.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, I'm just so thankful that I have him as my brother, and his status would never change how I feel about him. If anything, I have more respect for him. Because with all that he's been through, he never had a hateful heart. And he has every right to be angry and be hateful. But he never, never, exposed that. You know, he never showed anger and pressed that. He just always maintained. You sometimes would forget where he's at.
Yeah. So without going into details, please, no need to disclose what he did exactly, but, you know, you mentioned that he has a right to feel bitter, or I think that's what you said. I mean, what do you want to say anything about that? Like what, like maybe the, like the general circumference of his offense, or his motivation?
His, you know, like I said, he was just trying to make a better way for the rest of the, for our family. And, I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah. So it sounds like to me, he was doing in his mind what was a service.
Yeah.
Has he ever expressed regret with this? With
yeah, of course. I mean, sometimes we make decisions in life that we don't want to make. Or, you know, it's just sometimes forced on us and the environment. You know, when you're growing up in a certain environment where opportunities are not always in front of you, and sometimes you have to find a shortcut just to make ends meet. You know, doesn't, you know, because you're doing it doesn't mean there's no regret. Yeah, I'm pretty sure knowing Freddie as well as I know him, I'm pretty sure he has a lot of regret. I mean, he was already making the right decision when he was ready to walk away from everything. And it was just too late.
Has he been able to keep, you know, his family obligations and I mean, you kind of mentioned he has in terms of the way he keeps in touch with you all, but like that positive influence, you know, from prison, yeah. You've touched on it, but you would say yes.
Yes, because when my nieces, my daughter, my son, his children, as a young age, he would write them letters. And as they got older, he will also give them advice. He would guide them through any tough time that they were going through. So, yes, he has a tremendous influence on our family. And he's always constantly giving good advices. I mean, even with me, I mean, he helps me through my difficult time. You know, he helps me see things differently. You know, or help me, guide me into approaching things, you know, in a different way. So, yeah, he definitely has a huge influence on our family, a good one.
And what about his influence on people who are in prison with him? I mean, do you know anything about what he does in prison to be a positive force?
I know that he's definitely involved in a lot of programs. He's involved in organizations to help other inmates and even reach out to the community. I don't know if it's within Pennsylvania, but I know for one example, I remember one time he mentioned it was raising funds to get scholarship to help, I guess, inner city kids that changed their life, that made a change in their life at school, and they would give them scholarships so they would have an opportunity to go to college. They even raised donation, and I mean, the donation was raised within amongst the inmates.
Yeah,
these are inmates giving their money, and Lord know how much they make an hour, because I know they don't make that much. I think they make by the cent.
I think it's 20 something cents. It depends on the job, but yeah, per hour.
Right. So you got to imagine these guys are giving the little that they have to you know, participate in these donations, this fundraising. Another one that they've done was raise funds to be able to buy toys for the children's hospital, for the pediatrics. So these kids can have toys, you know, while they're in there, you know, while they're hospitalized. He has, I know he's done counseling, meaning like, you know, those who would listen, he would advise them, you know, how to, you know, to use their time wisely while they're in there, you know, don't just sit around, get an education, get a skill so that when you leave from here, you leave out of here with something, you know.
What do you think he'd be doing if he were out, if he could have a second chance and he could actually regain his freedom? What do you think your brother will be doing for this time?
He will continue to do what he's doing now, and that is help other people. I can see Freddie trying to reach out to the younger generation, be involved in, you know, with the community and helping young men that are struggling, you know, that's wandering in the street. I can see Freddie trying to reach out to the younger generation and guiding them.
Do you think,
you know, to live a better life?
Do you think that he would be actively trying to prevent other young people like himself from going through what he went through, from making those same choices? And
yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave it right there. Julia, thank you so much for taking your time and for also, sharing intimate details about your life and your family and for being emotionally vulnerable with us. Thank you.
And thank you for giving us the opportunity to share our story. Thank you.
My pleasure. Please don't go anywhere, listeners. We are going to just take a quick musical interlude, and we will be right back with Life Without Parole.
It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going on.
Welcome back, Life Without Parole listeners. This is Stacey Mandel, and I have with me a special guest. I have Freddie's daughter, Nia Rodriguez. Hi, Nia.
Hi, Stacey.
Welcome, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. Not a problem.
All right. So let's start with how old you were when your dad went to prison.
I was 2 years old when my dad went to prison.
2 years old, you probably don't have any memories of him leaving, but do you have an earliest memory, maybe, that you can share?
Sure. My earliest memory is when I was a teenager, I had went to visit him in prison for the first time that I remember. And my mom had driven me, but she didn't go into the visit room with me. I had to go in alone.
Was this your first time visiting him?
This was the first time I remember, so if I may have visited him before, I really don't know.
Got it. Okay, continue.
Yeah, but so I remember she had left me, she told me she was going to wait in the car, and I had to wait until like it was my turn so that they could call him up to the room. And before you go in, you know, you have to check your garments and whatnot, so I unfortunately was wearing an undergarment that wasn't allowed, so I had to remove it, and I also had to remove my sweater because it had a hood on it, so that's not allowed, and I wasn't aware of, you know, the articles of clothing you were allowed to wear. So I was waiting for him, but I was feeling nervous and uncomfortable for multiple reasons. I was going to be alone, sitting with somebody I really don't know, and we have a phone relationship, but it's not the same as like an in-person relationship with a parent. And then I was also feeling vulnerable as a young woman because I had to cover myself because I was afraid everyone was going to be looking at me. So when I finally went into the room, it was a bunch of men as well having visits with their family members. And then I was left sitting with my dad, who I hadn't seen in I don't know how long. Like I said, I don't remember any memories before then. So it was kind of awkward because I didn't know how to hold a conversation with him that flowed naturally, and I also felt uncomfortable in my body. So it was a pretty awkward experience, but I also felt like it was needed. But yeah, that was my earliest memory with him.
Mm-hmm. So what's it like having to try to maintain a relationship with your father, you know, when he's behind walls and gates and there's a lot of separation between you both?
I think it's easy to maintain a phone conversation with him because we only speak once or twice a week for about 10 to 15 minutes. And it's like, okay, I have these 15 minutes to dedicate to him once a week, and then like I kind of don't have to deal with it afterwards. So on that part it's easy, but on the following, now that COVID has been COVID and they have video visits and, you know, you can also visit in person, I think it's difficult for me to get to that next level because I feel like once I see him, I have like my throat gets choked up, I start tearing. I just really don't know how to deal with it. So as far as the phone relationship is easy, but the next steps is pretty difficult for me.
I see. So have you ever been able to have a heart-to-heart, like a conversation with your dad about his prior choices and how that's affected you?
I feel like we have had some sort of heart to heart. Now that I'm a little bit older, I've been able to give him 70 to 80% of how I feel, but I have been very mindful of him as well when expressing my feelings, because he's already dealing with a lot in prison. So to deal with my emotions, his emotions, I feel like it would be too much. But I've definitely expressed how I felt and how that's shaped me as a young woman.
I really credit you with wanting to take into consideration your dad and any suffering you might cause him. I'm also wondering if you think your dad would want you to just be 100% with him, if you could.
I think he would want me to be 100% with him. It might be difficult to hear, but I think he would. But right now, am I able to give that to him?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because I haven't 100% dealt with my own personal trauma.
Yeah, of course. That makes total sense. So, has he ever expressed anything to you about his own regret about past choices or anything like that?
I think we both have an understanding. He was a young man, barely in his 20s, and now he's 50-something years old, and he was at an age where you're young enough to make mistakes, but unfortunately, he had to pay for those mistakes with his life. He wasn't allowed a second chance to learn and become a better person or just a mature person. He had to immediately suffer the consequences, and he's been suffering them ever since.
How old are you, Nia, if I may ask?
I'm 29 years old.
And so you feel as a 29-year-old that if your dad had a second chance, maybe, do you think, I shouldn't put words in your mouth, but based on what you just said, do you think that if he had a second chance, he might be able to do things differently? Do you think he'd live differently, make different choices, mature?
He would have. At the time that he went to prison, he had a lot on his shoulders. He was taking care of his family, his siblings. He had to take care of himself. He had to grow up at a very young age and play a father figure while he was missing his. And I think at 29, I made 100 mistakes, but I didn't have to pay for it with my life. So I've been able to grow and change, and I think if he was awarded a second chance, he would definitely do things very different.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to let the world know about your father that we haven't covered?
Yeah. I think the world should know that even though he's been behind bars, he still made a change, and he's even changed his life behind bars. He receives a bachelor's degree, which helped motivate me to finish mine. He helped me when I was younger, and he gave me money so I could have like the perfect prom. And he's also
I have to interrupt you there. That sounds pretty amazing. How does your dad from prison make that happen?
He saved whatever money he had before he went to prison, and he was actually able to send me a check for a couple $100s and allowed me to do what I wanted to do with it, just so I could have a prom, because he couldn't physically be there for me.
Wow. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
No problem. But yeah, so he's worked with several organizations. He paints, he writes poems, and he's an emotional backbone to his family. Although he's not there physically, he tries to be present in everyone's life. His nieces, his nephew, his mom, his cousins, any friends. He's, even though he faces his own adversities and challenges, he still is a friend, a father, a brother, and he's still an amazing man. Although people make mistakes and it's illegal or whatnot, people are still allowed to make mistakes, learn, grow, and become better from them without having to pay for their life with it, you know? So he's made many accomplishments while being in prison.
Nia, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I just want to say, from my perspective, it sounds like a beautiful tribute you just gave to your father. And I hope that he might one day be able to hear this. Hopefully he'll be able to hear this recording.
Thank you. And I hope that people who have similar backgrounds as me, they don't hate that person forever and blame them for everything, and that they take the time to listen and forgive, you know? And that sometimes life happens for a reason, and that's all it can be.
I think we'll just leave it right there.
So this brings us to the end of our show, Life Without Parole, LWAP Radio. We're here every Friday, 9 a.m. Don't forget about the Groves Notebook, which is a Facebook page which you can visit. Thank you so much to FetLife Station, Lester Kinnegan, and we'll see you next Friday. Wishing everyone peace.
Different around me, 'cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Oh, just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on, I'm going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, I'm going home.